Welcome to the podcast series from the EMN Slovakia 2022 National Conference entitled Dignified Labour Conditions as a Tool to Fight Modern Slavery, organized by the European Migration Network in Slovakia. You are listening to the presentation on how the EU reduces the risk of labour exploitation and human trafficking by Pedro Asares. Pedro joined the European Labour Authority in August 2021 as the head of the Enforcement Analysis Unit and is responsible for concerted and joint inspections, tackling undeclared work and analysis and risk assessment. He has nearly 20 years of experience at both national and international level in the fields of cross-border investigations and international cooperation. Enjoy the presentation.
Thank you so much, colleagues, and a good morning to all of you. So my name is Pedro Asares. I think as it was mentioned, I work for the European Labour Authority, which is a recently established EU agency here in Slovakia. So we're neighbors to our IOM colleagues, to whom I would like to thank for the opportunity to be here today and to say a few words about the agency itself, but also about how we contribute as an EU body to reduce the risks of labor exploitation and human trafficking, which is, I will start by saying, a very wide encompassing area of work, which is certainly affected and affecting the work of many organizations. And there are many organizations deeply involved also in this topic. So I'll start with saying a few words about the agency that I work for. So I'll take the opportunity, and you'll forgive me the publicity, but I'll take the opportunity to introduce you a little bit to who we are and what we do. So as I've mentioned, we are indeed a very young agency. So we were just created in 2019. And when I say created, I mean put on paper. Then 2020 was the year of establishment for us, I would say. 2021 was the year where we started taking first steps and doing more operational work. 2022, we're still growing, and we hope to be fully operational by 2024. So there's still a lot of work to be done. So in a nutshell, our mission is basically to assist member states, authorities, and the European Commission in ensuring there's fair labor mobility across the European Union. So this is the core mandate of the agency. This is what we were essentially created for. And why were we created for this specific purpose? Because as you can see on the slide, so there is, as you know, free movement of workers, among other commodities in the European Union. And I think these numbers are pre-COVID, so they may be a little bit outdated, but you see the very, very large number of EU citizens who live and work in a country different from where they were previously residing or born. You'll see also that there's around 1.4 million EU citizens that commute daily to another member state specifically to go to work, and over 2.8 million are posted to work in a different EU country. And as you will see also, so the posting of workers is also something that we're very much engaged in. So when it comes to specific mandates, the five areas that we are targeting in particular are the free movement of workers, posting rules, social security coordination, and the social aspects of road transport. So you won't see here, for example, labor exploitation or human trafficking, as it is not as such directly under the mandate of the agency. However, I think it's in our name. So labor, the pre-assumption is that although indeed this is a phenomena with, again, many different perspectives and many different dimensions, and there is a very important one, which is the criminal nature of it, and that's dealt with by other authorities, both at the national and at the EU and international level. But you'll see also, if you ever have insomnia at night and you wish to read our legal regulation, you'll see there that, for example, the authority, so the European Labour Authority, should cooperate with other agencies of the European Union as regards the fight, for example, against organized crime and trafficking in human beings. And it mentions specifically, for example, Europol and Eurojust. It also says, so another recital in our regulation also mentions that if during our activities, and when I say our activities, I have here to underline that we are a non-executive agency, so we support member states in their actions. So we provide coordination, we provide a wide number and wide range of forms of support, but we as such, as a EU agency, we do not go to member states, we do not execute inspections, we merely offer support in the form of logistical support, in the form of financial support, legal support if necessary. But if during one of those activities that we are supporting member states with, we come across any type of infringement or irregularity that may fall outside of our direct mandate, such as labor exploitation, for example, we are in a position that we should report this to member states, but beyond reporting it, we should be able to cooperate with them, and not just with member states, but also with the European Commission and other EU bodies. So we fully recognize that our agency is not competent to deal with the criminal dimension of this type of phenomenon, but surely there's a way that we can work with member states around, for example, raising general awareness on the topic, around emphasizing the many, many links between the topics that we deal with, such as bad working conditions, situations around remuneration, for example, and underdeclared work and undeclared work, and their links with phenomena such as labor exploitation. So how do we deliver on this mandate? So we're basically structured around three main operational pillars. So we have a component that basically focuses on providing information on rights and obligations, obviously, to workers, but also to employers. We're heavily also invested and devote a lot of effort to information campaigns. So we've devoted some attention to seasonal work in 2021. In 2022, we're heavily engaged in supporting information campaigns about road transport, and we will be focusing for next year on road transport as well. We're also responsible for managing the URES network, which is a job matching engine for job seekers and for companies that have vacancies that they wish to basically advertise. And we have a very important pillar of cooperation as well. So we have a network of 27 EU national liaison officers. So in the building, and when I say in the building, I literally mean across, down the street. We are very nearby. So we have representatives from each of the 27 EU member states within the union. And basically, this is a very powerful tool. So if there's a need to clarify any questions, if there's a need to streamline cooperation, for them, it's just a matter of getting up from their desks, walking 10 meters to the desk of the other liaison officer and getting engaged directly. So that's a very, very interesting possibility. And they are here to service, obviously, the agency, but to service more than anything else, the member states. So we have here today Mr. Jaroslav Kovac, so he's the liaison officer for the Slovak Republic. And again, he's just one of the representatives of all the member states that we have in-house. Then we're also engaged in capacity building. And in this respect, we will, I think, have some interaction also with the topic of labor exploitation. We have a mediation function, so member states can come to ELA to solve disputes in a mediatory way, I would say. And then we have the third and the most operational pillar within the unit, which is the enforcement unit, which is the one that I'm responsible for. And here we have three different tasks. So we provide support to member states' concerted and joint inspections, which focus on the mandate, on the five different topics within our mandate. We have a team that deals with labor mobility analysis and risk assessment, and we have also another team that deals with tackling undeclared work and supporting member states to fight this phenomenon. So just a short breakdown of how we're structured. So this is our organigram, which shows a circular structure to it, just to emphasize how much synergy and cooperation between the different functions of the agency is important to us. And then on the right-hand side of the slide, you'll see the three different tasks of the enforcement and analysis unit and a more granular breakdown of what exactly we do. So in what concerns concerted and joint inspections and the support that we offer member states for it, we're responsible to provide conceptual, logistical, technical, and legal support to their enforcement authorities. We're also engaged in the development of operational guidelines and checklists for joint inspections. So we're very mindful that 27 EU member states means 27 different legal regimes to tackle some of these issues. It also means 27 different working practices to perform inspections. And what we're trying to do, so I don't think uniformization is a very nice word, but definitely some harmonization in practice will make it easier for member states to cooperate with each other. And this is also what we try to achieve. In relation to analysis and risk assessment, we're providing operational analytical support to inspections. So what we're trying to do is when we receive a request for a concerted or joint inspection from the member states and it contains information, we'll try to add value to that information and to give it back to member states in the form of an intelligence report that we hope will assist them to be more effective in their inspections. We hope also that it will assist member states to identify, for example, other companies connected to the companies that they are trying to inspect, or the presence of those companies also in other member states and then expand the scope of the inspections themselves. Capacity building is also an important part of what we do. And then in relation to tackling undeclared work, the main focus is on, again, enhancing cooperation between the member states, but also helping them to improve the practices that they use to basically tackle this phenomenon. Now, going more specifically into inspections, you'll see here some photographs from recent inspections that we have supported member states with. So we're also growing very quickly in this area. So this year, I think we're approaching some 35 to 40 joint inspections supported by the agency. But the scope and target areas for these inspections are basically high-risk sectors where labor abuses could be more prevalent. And here we're, for example, focusing on agriculture, on the road transport sector, construction, hospitality, forestry, meat processing, for example. And you'll see an almost exact overlap with the sectors of activity where labor exploitation is also more prevalent, I would say. So there's clearly an overlap between what labor inspectors and law enforcement authorities do in this respect, because we're looking at the same type of phenomena. We're looking at the same population of workers. In what comes to our scope, again, so we're only legally mandated to deal with situations involving EU nationals and third country nationals residing legally within the European Union. So everything that has to do with irregular migration, obviously there are other competent authorities to deal with it, and we do want to work in cooperation with them, but it falls outside of our mandate and our remit. In terms of the biggest types of fraud or infringements that we see in connection with the cross-border aspects of labor mobility, those are, for example, the involvement of temporary work and recruitment agencies, fraud in relation to the posting of workers. We see also a lot of issues in subcontracting chains, for example, and attributing responsibility for abuse to the different employers or to the different intermediaries that form part of these supply chains. And that's also a challenge that we see member states struggling with, but also, for example, bogus self-employment. In relation to the irregularities that we see more often in the inspections that we support, we can, for example, provide examples of remuneration or in compliance with the remuneration rules, in compliance with working conditions. We see also undeclared work and ultimately situations which could in the end prove to be labor exploitation as well. On this slide, what I would basically wanted to do is really to emphasize the very significant role that labor inspectors can play in addressing human trafficking for labor exploitation. So we've heard already from our previous speaker that is and there are a number of overlaps between areas in this respect, and we do see that, for example, workers which are working undeclared or are already experiencing bad working conditions, that these situations can often hide more difficult or more serious forms of labor abuse, and they definitely create vulnerability. So we've heard already, for example, of debt bondage. So whenever workers are unprotected, whenever they are uninformed, they're definitely more prone to exploitation. And labor inspections, and this is something that I hear very often and that I would like to highlight, whereas, for example, law enforcement has a very reactive approach to this kind of situation, so they'll basically take action in face of a complaint or in face of being requested to do something. Literally, labor inspectors, every time they go out to work, they are performing their activities within work sites. So that's always a potential situation where they can come across a possible case of labor exploitation without having to do something outside their normal work. So it's just a matter of being mindful to it. So on their daily duties, they're constantly faced with situations that could be situations of labor exploitation or forced labor. And again, it's just a very, I see it as a situation of where prevention is definitely the goal rather than to have a more repressive approach where you have a complaint. So this should be part of the daily work of labor inspectors. And again, labor inspections and again, in opposition with what may happen for more law enforcement-like or for police. So labor inspectors can check workplaces and accommodation without much formalism to it. So they won't need, for example, a search warrant to enter some premises, whereas police forces will in some cases do. So they have this freedom to really perform a number of checks and to do it within the scope of their daily activities. They also have the opportunity to interact and to interview workers. And for example, if they do involve our agency, one of the forms of support that we can make available is, for example, interpretation, which is, as we all know, very important when we're working with foreign workers as well. Labor inspectors can also check documentation from non-EU workers, so such as residence and work permits as well. They can perform checks on wages, working hours, entitlements in relation to leave, tax and social security payments. So it's a very wide portfolio of activities that they can perform checks on. And then they can also obtain more information, for example, on the deduction of what sometimes are random fees that can create debt bondage. Again, as we all know, it's one of the vulnerable situations that potential victims of human trafficking can enter into. So they can be, for example, charged for travel costs. They can be overcharged for accommodation, local transport, to be able to use a phone to call their family abroad. Or if they are in a remote location, they can, for example, be charged for someone to go to somewhere else and pick up food and supplies for them as well. So these are all situations which are creating vulnerability. And labor inspectors ultimately also can access a number of documents, such as written work contracts, records of working time, and they can basically go through these documents and through all these elements in the search of potential situations of more serious abuse. And I think that all these scenarios, all these possibilities do allow for more effective detection of possible indicators of labor exploitation. Now, when it comes still to the national or to cooperation in addressing trafficking for labor exploitation and focusing here on the realm of national authorities, clearly, I don't think this can be an individual or isolated approach. So different authorities need to work together to be more effective. So no different authority has all the legal mandate to tackle this type of issue, nor the legal knowledge and expertise, for example. So we do need to work together. And you see also on this, again, I don't know how much you can really read it, but there's a spectrum of situations involving labor abuse, which goes from decent work or less than decent work all the way through slavery, for example. And then in between you have from minor abuses to more serious abuses as well. And there's clearly a division of tasks between labor authorities and law enforcement, where they enter the criminal domain of this phenomena. But definitely there's an area of overlap, and this is where colleagues need to work together. And the authorities that are more obvious to us are indeed the labor inspectors, police, immigration authorities as well, the judicial sector, tax and social security authorities too, so NGOs, social partners, civil society, the private sector. So there's a wide range of different stakeholders with a very important role to play in this area. And why do they need to work together? It was already mentioned. So this is a very complex phenomena with very high evidentiary requirements to establish proof for a court case, which requires, in the end, exchange of information, exchange of best practices, a multidisciplinary and multi-agency approach to it. And this is what will enable us to detect and prosecute infringements, but ultimately also to protect victims. And the challenges that do warrant this form of cooperation, again, have to do with the lack of this kind of structured cooperation between authorities, which still does exist, the lack of common legal definitions, as we have seen from the presentation of the previous speaker, high evidentiary requirements that I've alluded already to, but also to a certain lack of resources that still exists in this area. So I've worked for other EU agencies in this particular area, and I've worked also at the national level with it. And although the topic is very political and it's very, very sexy in a way that it draws a lot of attention, sometimes this doesn't come with perhaps the adequate level of resources to deal with such a complex phenomenon. And also what we see is that different authorities have different priorities and different objectives, so they're very mindful of their own tasks, and sometimes tasks which do not fall necessarily within their remit may be not as prioritized as they should be. So this is also another challenge. So why do we feel that colleagues need to work together, so labor inspectors and other authorities with competence in this area? And this is something that, again, we stress to our colleagues, to the member states that we work with during inspections. So for us, it's very clear that this spectrum and how difficult it is at times to distinguish between what would be a minor case of labor exploitation, between a more severe case, what constitutes forced labor, what constitutes human trafficking. So it's sometimes not that obvious or not that easy to identify these cases. But what we do feel is that, so labor authorities, as they come across or potentially could come across labor exploitation during their normal tasks, during a visit, a regular visit to a workplace, they need in the end to be able to identify a case if they see it, and they need to have the right tools and the right context to be able to refer it for criminal investigation. So when in doubt, the majority of member states or the majority of labor authorities within the member states are not competent to pursue the criminal aspects of these cases. We have it in a couple of countries. So we have a representative from the Netherlands, and the Dutch labor inspection as wider powers in this respect. So they have a criminal investigations department, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they should work in isolation from police. So I think as a rule, labor inspectors should be equipped again to identify cases and to be able to refer them for further action. At the same time, we also see that so whenever police or whenever law enforcement colleagues and criminal investigators are pursuing a case of trafficking in human beings for the purposes of labor exploitation, and again, because it's a difficult crime to investigate and to produce evidence on, if they don't succeed to come with a successful case to court, there should be still a follow-up to it. And whatever information they gathered during their investigation can still be used by labor inspectors for other types of penalties and for administrative purposes as well. So they need to be able also to revert the case and the information that they've gathered to labor inspectors, as they can impose possibly other types of penalties and infringements on not so good employers in this case. So clearly there's a lot of synergies to take advantage of in the work that labor inspectors and law enforcement authorities do in this respect. So at the EU level, what is the European Labor Authority trying to do to address or to help address trafficking for labor exploitation? So we have a number of initiatives ongoing. So we have partnered with Europol and the member states under the auspices of something called EMPACT. EMPACT stands for European Multidisciplinary Platform Against Criminal Threats. And it's nice to see. So I see some familiar faces in the room that are part of that platform as well. And what it does, it brings labor inspectors and police officers together to perform weeks of action and to work together towards identifying more cases of labor exploitation. And so ELA has just recently joined this platform, but we are already co-leading two operational actions which relate to labor exploitation as well. So we're heavily invested also in encouraging our partners, so labor inspectors, to participate more actively in these activities, and we will offer whatever support they need for it. We're also expanding our cooperation with other EU agencies, with international organizations as well. So today is a good example with IOM, but we have done, for example, we have organized jointly workshops with ILO, again, focusing on the particular topic of reducing risks of labor exploitation and undeclared work, for example, for Ukrainian refugees or displaced persons within the EU. Also within the agency, we have set up a subgroup that was specifically targeting the prevention of undeclared work and exploitation among Ukrainian refugees. And we are also engaging more and more in training on soft skills, interviewing techniques for labor inspectors, where there is also this perspective of being mindful that whatever worker that they are interacting with when they're doing their regular checks could potentially be a victim of labor exploitation. Just an example of another initiative that we are taking. So I've mentioned that the agency is responsible for managing the EURES platform. So again, this is a platform to match job seekers with employers across the European Union. So far, it has been focused solely within the European Union. So it was only accessible to EU nationals and other foreigners legally residing within the Union. But now with, and again, for unfortunate reasons, there is now a talent pool pilot, which allows access to Ukrainian refugees and other nationals that have fled the Ukraine because of the Russian invasion to access this particular platform. So this was a joint initiative between different commission services, so DG Employment, which is our parent DG, plus DG Migration and Home Affairs, and it's supported by Ella. It will have a limited time frame, so this will only go on until the end of the temporary protection scheme applies. It was recently launched, and again, its main objective is to provide job seekers with the possibility to find a job in a very safe and secure and transparent way within the EU. And again, obviously, I think the more information workers have, the more protected they are, and the more protected their rights are as well. So this is, in a nutshell, what I wanted to really tell you about. Again, the main focus would be to highlight the intersections between the work of labor inspectors and other stakeholders that have a role to play in identifying and protecting victims of human trafficking. And if there are any questions, I'm obviously more than happy to take them. So thank you very much.
This presentation was part of the 2022 EMN Slovakia National Conference. The conference was organized by the International Organization for Migration Slovakia as the coordinator of the Slovak EMN National Contact Point. The European Migration Network is funded by the European Union and co-funded by the Ministry of Interior of the Slovak Republic. Thank you for listening.